Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Yay! That's a win on the road. Tremendous. Why are you looking at me like I'm saying that with sarcasm in my voice? Why are you looking at me like that? Oh, you mean you wanted, I see. You want literal meaning.
Let's try it again. See if you can convince me this time. Do it again.
Okay. Woo-hoo! Yeah! Way to go! Outstanding job!
Still doesn't sound like the Christmas spirit.
I didn't say anything about Christmas spirit. I'm just, you know, just trying to be, you know, truthful. And then I guess I probably should say, wow. Yeah, there you go.
Woo-wee! See, if you did it like that, that would have worked.
Okay. I'll remember that next time. Well, we welcome you inside the playbook for a Tuesday here. The fact is that, yeah, sure, the team won a road game. Did they play well? No. Did they... I'm searching here. I'm trying to figure out the proper verbiage for how we really feel, how I really feel about the game. It's a win. I'm not going to get too hot and bothered about it one way or the other. It wasn't a loss. We would certainly be complaining a heck of a lot more if it were a loss. Let's see. Rome wasn't built in a day. You got to start somewhere. How many other cliches are we going to go through here? It's okay. It is what it is, you know, all that stuff. So we have plenty to nitpick today here on a Nitpick Tuesday. It is going to be a little bit of a shortened work week here inside the playbook and Patriots.com radio because of the Christmas holiday on Thursday. So we're going to combine three shows into 2 days between today and tomorrow. Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL research coordinator, who normally joins us on Thursdays. He will join us in our second hour today. Not only to look back on what has transpired, but also to consider what will go on here in Week 16 upcoming this weekend with the Patriots getting ready to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars in the final regular season game here at Gillette Stadium. Now, so we have that, and we'll also hear from Maurice Jones-Drew and Jack Del Rio, running back and head coach, respectively, of the Jacksonville Jaguars today. So we'll spend some time nitpicking over Sunday's win. Sorry, I can't keep the sarcasm out of the voice. But we will also turn our attentions toward this Sunday as well, because you can't do anything about the last game. The only thing you can do is that you can hope that this team is kind of getting the bad stuff out of the way. I happen to believe, and this is with all sincerity, and this may come as a surprise to some, because I know, you know, PFW guys, you know, give me grief for, you know, being negative or what have you. All we're doing here is just pointing out fact. I don't mean to be slanted one side, negative or positive. This is, you know, it's an opinion show. The opinions that we give and the PFW guys give are based on the facts as we observe them. And then it's kind of how we translate it. The fact of the matter is, though, is I don't believe that there is nobody that the Patriots cannot beat when it comes down to the playoff derby. The team that concerns me the most right now, and this is my question of the day for you, I want you to forget everything that you've seen or gone to or everything this team has gone through over the last few weeks. Forget the downward spiral. Forget all that stuff. Let's just consider the Patriots, who need a win or a Miami loss to clinch the AFC East for the 7th time this decade, which is considerable. It's a solid, worthwhile accomplishment. It's something that longtime Patriots fans have always hoped this franchise could get to that level, and that's why a couple of weeks ago I brought up the whole complacency issue with the fans, because they've gotten spoiled through this decade, and yet here we are about to clinch a 7th AFC East championship this decade. And it's overlooked. All right, so I want you to take that in consideration. This team is a playoff team. It will either be the 3 or the 4 seed, and it's looking more and more like it now might be the 3 seed because of Cincinnati's pratfall as well. Who in the AFC, and I want you to also consider all of the 7-7 teams who are all within a game now of sneaking into that 6th playoff spot, or the 5th playoff spot for that matter, and, of course, of which the Patriots are playing one this weekend. Consider every team and which one worries you the most. That's the question of the day. What team worries you the most in the AFC right now as we get ready to get into Week 16 in the 2009 NFL season? Sure, you can dial it ahead 2 weeks if you want to look at a potential first-round playoff matchup. If the Patriots are the 3 seed, they would play the 6. Right now, that would still be Denver. Last week, the Patriots were the 4, Denver was the 5. It would still be Denver. It looks like the Patriots and the Broncos are destined to play here on Wild Card Weekend. That doesn't mean that things can't change over the next 2 weeks. Frankly, my own personal thoughts here are this. Number one, the team that concerns me the most is San Diego. I do believe that the Patriots should have defeated Indianapolis. We all know that they kind of, gave that one away. It just seems to me that, you know, especially since they'd have to play San Diego in California, even though the Patriots have had success there in the past, they seem to be a little bit more on their game. They seem to be a little bit more multidimensional than what the Colts would be. I'm not so sure that there are too many fans terribly worried about going back into Indianapolis and trying to take one from the Colts when nothing is really expected. You almost did it the first time. You probably should have done it the first time. Maybe that'll be motivation enough for the Patriots to get over the hump. Call me crazy, but that one doesn't worry me near as much as a game against the Chargers does. I'm also somewhat concerned with this week's opponent, the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we'll kind of touch on some of those things here in the next little bit as well. But I want you to concern, as far as a question of the day, concern yourself with what team concerns you the most as a Patriots fan. Is it this next week's game? Is it the Houston game? Is it the first-round playoff? Is it a potential, you know, semifinal or AFC championship game match? What team in the AFC right now concerns you the most? Webradio@patriots.com is how you answer us here on the program. So we hope you'll take some time to chip in your 2 cents worth. 508-543-7482, our telephone number. So that's number one. Number two, obviously we entertain your nitpicks, of which there are many from Sunday's game. I'll come up with mine here in a little bit for you. Had some thoughts, you know, jotted down after, you know, watching, especially toward the tail end of the game on Sunday, and then looking and relooking at some of the extended highlights of the first part of the game. I was in the middle of doing a college basketball game on Sunday, so I have to perform the mea culpa here. I didn't get done until about halftime with what I was doing, so managed to catch everything else on highlight and listened in and saw most of the second half of the game. Yeah, well, hey, it's called making a paycheck, right?
So, excused.
Well, okay. If you say so, does that mean I can go home now? Damn.
Nice try.
Oh, I thought I'd try.
Hey, you know what?
I thought I'd be right in the spirit of things.
You know what I'll do?
What?
I'll give you Thursday off.
Thank you.
How's that?
That's fantastic. All right, so I don't have to come in on Thursday. I really greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
You were lying your ass off.
Greatly appreciate it. Greatly appreciate it. So we have nitpicks to get into. I would say, wow, where do we start? I think we talked a little about this last week, that Brady's performance has been less than, shall we say, focused. Maybe it has something to do with his being a new father. Maybe it has something to do with the multitude of injuries that he's had to battle through. But I think, you know, that's one place I'd like to start. I'd like to see Tom Brady have that edge, which I don't think he has right now. You know, and Tom would probably say, if we had a chance to converse about it today, I'm sure he would say, well, don't worry so much about me. I'll be fine.
Hell no.
Well, I think we all kind of expect him to say something like that, but the fact is that he's not fine. And that would be nitpick number one. Nitpick number two is the continuing plain vanilla offense that continues to, you know, try to pass itself off as the New England Patriots.
Boring.
Yeah, very. Where is the tight end gone? I mean, I realize they're trying to keep, you know, Watson back and even Baker back and blocking schemes. But, you know, when you have Light and Vollmer out at tackle for a lot of the game this past Sunday, you know, don't we all think that that's the best offensive line that the Patriots can have? And if it is, doesn't it stand to reason if they are, if that's the best performing unit, that maybe some time would be bought to throw the football? See, this is what leads me to think that Tom is not all there. Could certainly be physical, maybe with a little bit of the mental mixed in, but he's just not all there. This was a game plan that was designed, in my estimation, for this team to go in and do nothing but just get a W. Let's please, good Lord, let's get by Buffalo. And if we get by Buffalo, then we can start to ramp it up. This will be the game, because it's a playoff-caliber opponent this weekend against Jacksonville. This will be the game that this team is going to try to hit on all cylinders, in my estimation. Why? Because if they win this game, it would not surprise me to see them rest a lot of people against Houston. Okay? That's why I think this team may end up winning this division at 10-6. Don't be surprised if it happens. I told you this, what, a month ago. Did we not talk about this a month ago, Doc? We talked about this at least a month ago, if not more than that. You need to go back in the archives and find this. You know, all right, I won't make you do that. But fact is that we said this Houston game is not going to be a gimme, and we said depending upon if whether or not Houston has any playoff life left playing it, it's going to be very difficult. Well, now that could still be the case. It's remote. Houston's one of those 7-7 teams. But we have a new wrinkle to throw into the mix here. The fact is the Patriots, if they clinch this weekend with a win, or with a Miami loss. It doesn't take both. In other words, if the Patriots stumble to Jacksonville, Miami still loses, the Patriots still win the division this weekend. All right? So let's set the record straight right there. And if one of those two things happens, Patriots will be 10-5 going into Houston. Now, knowing that you've got Brady who's dinged up, you'd love to get Fred Taylor back. You know, you've had Sammy Morris dinged up. You've had Randy Moss dinged up. You've had Wes Welker with his normal, you know, aches and pains and bumps and bruises. You've had Stephen Neal, you know, who we all can agree, I think, is a superior run blocker. Miami plays Houston this weekend, right? That's right. Son of a gun. It's amazing how it becomes full circle. So we'll be rooting for Houston to win this week and then lose the next week. Isn't that great? Houston obviously is playing for their playoff life. So is Miami. That'll be an interesting game to watch. Just to stay alive, just to see if they can, you know, continue to kind of hang in there. I fully expect the Patriots to rest guys, gang. I do. I think they're going to put it all on the line this weekend, and then should they be fortunate enough to win and or Miami lose, then at 10-5, I don't want to say they'll mail it in, because I don't think the Patriots ever mail anything in. I don't think professional athletes ever mail anything in, but I think this team will allow their second teamers to carry the load on their backsides against Houston in the final week of the season. Because if they've already clinched the division, they can't really improve their playoff spot. It doesn't really matter whether you're a 3 or a 4. It doesn't matter. You still are going to get a home game. You still have to play on the wild card round. Does it really matter if you play San Diego or Indianapolis in the second round? No, it shouldn't. Frankly, if it were me, I'd prefer to play Indy in the second round. I think he got a better shot. I think he got a better shot of working up momentum and then going to San Diego and knocking him off in the AFC Championship. I think that's a better route to go, because it allows you a chance to kind of get that old freight train moving behind you. That's just me. I don't know if you feel differently. Feel free to disagree if you like. But I don't see it. I don't see this team. If there's nothing to play for, if they can't, which they can't improve past the 3 seed, what difference does it make whether they're the 3 or the 4? And if they've already clinched the division, what difference does it make if they win or they lose? There's no difference. They'll try to win the game, sure, but they're not going to try to win the game with all of their weapons. They'll be resting.
Hello, you play to win the game.
But only if, only if you know, you have all of your weapons, and I don't think the Patriots will have it. So I want you to consider that. Today, as maybe even a potential nitpick for you, although I realize it wasn't a nitpick from, you know, Sunday's game with Buffalo, but I want you to look into your crystal ball, and I want you to remember what we've talked about here in the playbook over the last few weeks, and see if that doesn't kind of ring true with you. And does it not make sense? Does it not make sense to you that if this team, you know, you're going to be playing a playoff caliber team, so here's a great chance to see what you can do against a team that's playing for its playoff lives this weekend. Jaguars will come in here undoubtedly. You know, they'll lay it all out on the line. They've got nothing to lose. If they lose, they're toast. So let's just go out and play. Patriots have a chance now to get a quality home win against a team that, you know, certainly would be of a caliber that they would face in the opening round minimum of the playoffs. Get a chance to build a little momentum, and then you get a chance to take, you know, some of the walking wounded and rest them a little bit in the last week before you have to, you know, start the second season, the playoffs. Anybody else agree with that? Anybody disagree with that? Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. All right, other nitpicks from Sunday. You know, Brady and the play calling on offense, I realize it was probably to do just enough to win the game. But let's flip it to the other side a little bit. I actually thought that, you know, and Bill Belichick singled him out in the postgame press conference on Sunday. Mike Wright did a very good job. Jonathan Wilhite's been banged around here a little bit by myself and some others, and, you know, he came up with a pick. You know, so defensively, Tully Bantakane had 3 sacks. He's got a career-high 8.5 sacks now for the season. So let's pass along some plaudits. As long as we're doing the nitpicking, let's also, you know, pat some guys in the back for the job that they did. And I think those are guys that certainly deserve some mention. Lawrence Maroney ran the ball again pretty well. Deserves some mention. Randy Moss caught the ball. I mean, you know, realize that, you know, Randy's going to be Randy, and we're going to get, you know, a 45-second post-game sound clip from him every once in a while, and that's just the way it's going to be. But as long as he's out there performing, and I guess he did to an extent on Sunday, there's no reason to knock him. You know, we'll knock you if you need to be knocked. We're not going to knock you if there's no need to knock you. Who else has got nitpicks? Who else has got nitpicks? What else did we see? What else was learned? If anything, I realize that I think the overall, the overwhelming sort of feeling here from Sunday is one of malaise, of one of disinterest, one of, you know, kind of just shuffling and sloughing through it and getting by, and you're not really accomplishing much, and you're just sort of surviving and advancing and moving on here. And that may be the best way to really describe it. You know, there were a lot of penalties. There was just a general lack of malaise overall, offensively speaking, in the second half. They played almost as if they were just trying not to lose it, even though at 14-3, I don't think anybody did anybody really feel like the game was out of hand? I mean, anybody really feel like they were going to lose the game when it was 14-3 at halftime? See, I didn't. I kind of felt like, you know what, all along, that was probably enough to win the game, and I think that's why the overall feeling of the game left us thinking the way we were. We weren't thrilled, but, you know, it's a win. Let's move on. Now, here's the other thing, though, and I guess this might be my biggest nitpick of the entire game when you look at it in circumspect here, simply because you played also, I think, well enough to lose the game on Sunday. See, with a close-to-the-vest, conservative attitude, conservative game plan, you allowed Buffalo the chance to get back in the game, and if not for, you know, a couple of stupid errors on the Bills, the offsides and the offensive kick, and certainly prior to that, Josh Reed's drop of a wide-open would-be touchdown pass on the previous drive, that game was 17-17 and headed potentially for overtime. I mean, Reed dropped the score that would have made it 17-10. Patriots did a miserable three and out. Buffalo got great field position after kick return and then gave Josh Reed a second chance, and he scored. If he doesn't drop the first one, it's a tie game, and Buffalo is an offsides away from recovering an onside kick. And why wouldn't they go? Who's to say they wouldn't have still tried the onside kick, even tied at 17? Why not? They're 5-8. They're not going anywhere. They've lost to the Patriots 12 times in a row. What do they have to lose? Nothing. I would have booed them if they hadn't tried it, if I were a Bills fan. The Patriots don't realize how incredibly fortunate they are. They pulled in the reins, and it just damn near came back to kill them. And I guess that's my biggest nitpick of them all, overall, over the individual errors and subpar performances that we saw on Sunday. And I realized they felt like they probably had to pull in the reins a little bit just because, you know, they're banged up. And they thought that they could get away with it because Buffalo is an inferior opponent. Well, it almost got them. It didn't. They've beaten the Bills now 13 straight times, which is extraordinary in this day and age of, quotation marks inserted here, parody. But the Patriots beat the Bills 13 straight times. Chargers have beaten the Raiders 13 straight times. So, I mean, come on. Where's the parody there? It's amazing. You realize eventually that streak is going to end. And I'm sure Buffalo fans feel like if there were any justice in this world, the streak would have ended on Sunday. I have a good friend of mine who's a Bills fan, and you know, and he actually takes it pretty well. But he was kind of like that after the game on Sunday. He's kind of like, you know, man, you guys played lousy enough to lose that game. We just couldn't play well enough to win the game. And he's absolutely 110% right. Played lousy enough to lose the game. They just couldn't play well enough to win it. And so I guess that's really the biggest, you know, nitpick that I have overall. And it's disappointing. You know, whether or not you're playing close to the vest to make sure that you don't get anybody else dinged up or what have you, or because you thought maybe you could win the game without giving your best supreme effort, that just kind of flies in the face of who this team is and what it's been about over the last decade. And that disappointed me more than anything else. What about you? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. John in Los Angeles is on the phone. John, welcome inside the playbook.
John Rook, how are you?
I'm good. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Awesome.
I'm calling to nitpick a couple of things.
Go for it.
One of which is, no offense, people like you who were ragging on Maroney all season.
Yep.
When the offensive line had more to do with the fact that he was dancing behind the line,
yep,
than I think was being fairly put out there. I think that he has not, he's gaining more confidence as he goes along. But I looked at all of his runs when everyone was complaining about him, and mm-hmm, frankly, a lot of the times he was dancing around because there's somebody in the backfield right after he was handed the ball.
Yeah, the line was not doing a well enough job, but you have to admit, though, his penchant for going side to side, east-west, as opposed to being a north-south guy, has what's gotten him in trouble.
That's true, and what I think is that he also suffered a little bit by his reputation for having done that so much in the past.
He's also suffered
like
by reputation.
He didn't do it as much as people were saying.
Okay, I won't disagree with that. I will also tell you that he's also suffered because his reputation has been a guy to sort of refrain from contact. Everybody thought he was a fragile running back based on the nature of his injuries. And we were led to believe that based on what we were being told. So, and without the truth coming out, and I made this statement, John, earlier this year. I said, the Patriots' penchant for playing injuries close to the vest has hurt Lawrence Maroney's career. Because it should have gotten out there that Lawrence had a broken shoulder blade, which is why he couldn't take on tacklers. Which is why he was playing with the shoulder blade, which to me shows a lot of guts, but he was trying to avoid contact. Had we known that, nobody would be calling him a wuss or whatever else, you know, he was being called.
Right, right. My other big nitpick is for something you were just actually talking about before. Brandon Merriweather talking trash to Josh Reed after Josh got that ball, which, it was a terrible drop.
Yeah.
But Brandon needs to shut it. You know?
Yeah, say that again because your phone just broke up. Well, I think we lost his line. All right. John, if you're listening, give us a call back because we lost
Magic Jack strikes again.
Is that what that is? I was actually going to ask about that. I wonder if any of those things work, like that and Uma and some of the other online things that you can get where you can plug in your phone over, your high-speed internet or whatever. Those things actually work.
Do you know what Skype is? S-K-Y-P-E.
Skype. Yeah, that's another one too, I guess, huh? Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, John, if you're of the mind to do that, then we'll get you back on and we'll continue talking about it. Let's take a time out here and we'll let John regroup. We've got some emails coming in. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. We're going over nitpicks on a Nitpick Tuesday here in the playbook. And then we're also going to turn our attention toward the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's this week's opponent.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories. Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of 3 flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
John Rook back at the playbook here on a Tuesday. It is the day before Christmas Eve. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Day before.
Day before Christmas Eve, right? Christmas Eve's Thursday. This is day before the day before. No, it'd be the day before the day before Christmas Eve. There's two.
Right.
Okay. Now I'm all confused. Why did I start this tangent? Why did I do? Why, that's my own fault. I blame myself. Okay. All right, let's get back to the phones because John, we found John in L.A. again. John, which service do you have? What knocked you off the air?
You know what knocked me off the air? Being in the basement of my cell phone. I really should
have done better. Okay. All right. Go ahead and pick back up where you left off.
So Johns have something in common. They both like doing this show from their basements.
From their basements,
exactly.
That's right.
John's in their basement.
That's right.
We should co-host. I was just saying that I like Brandon Merriweather. I thought that mid-season, everyone calling him all-pro was a little over the line. But I don't like, and I even like the spirit that he brings. I don't like trash-talking a guy who just dropped the ball where he had you beat. He just happened to drop it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it invites that kind of karma, which is the Bills start coming back and they make it 17-10. And it just, I don't like seeing that, especially on a team that's struggling.
Yeah. Well, I have to agree with you, but that's, you have to realize that's the kind of guy Brandon Merriweather is. I mean, he kind of brought that reputation with him from Miami, and right. as did a lot of those guys from the U. And I would prefer that not happen. I can't believe that anybody in the locker room would approve of that, but you know, my guess is that that's probably not their biggest issue. So, you know, unless, you know, one of the quote unquote grizzled veterans that remain says something to him, it'll probably go unnoticed and we'll go on from there. You are right, though. I mean, he's been very fortunate. In the last couple of weeks, his play has not been on par with what we saw toward the middle part of the season. So, I mean, Brandon probably needs to watch out where he's going here, because he's one that's also been guilty of slipping a little bit. In fact, I think it was his busted assignment in that touchdown catch that Steve Smith made against for Carolina, was it not?
It was, and it was according to Sean Springs, who ratted him out and pretended that he was just kidding, but...
Listen. Actually, I like that, because what Sean Springs was doing was what a grizzled veteran should do. In other words, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I'm kidding here, but he's also sending a message. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying, and I would agree with you if Sean Springs had been on the team for 3 years and contributing. But what he has been is being a pain in the ass in the locker room for 8 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever it is.
Well, that may be. That may be.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. But I don't disagree with you. It would be nice for some veteran to come in and sort of kick a little butt in there, but I'm not sure Sean Springs is the one to do it.
Okay. Well, that's certainly, I think, a fair enough assessment. What about the question that I asked, John, kind of start the show today. What team in the AFC concerns you the most right now?
San Diego.
Yeah. See? I think it's almost – that's a slam dunk. How can it not be San Diego?
Well, I mean, the only way it cannot, obviously, the answer would be because it's Indy, but, you know, I think you and I probably agree that – you don't have to travel as far. You had some success. I mean, not ultimately, but you played them well for 58 minutes.
You've got emotion involved because it's a rivalry now, you know?
Yeah.
And you've got that close call that every one of those guys in that locker room down the hallway here, every one of those guys would love to have a second shot at, you know,
right.
to finish.
Right.
So you've got emotion, you got chip on shoulder, you got this, you got that, and, you know, and against San Diego, all you got is a good football team, you know?
Yeah,
frankly, that says something.
I agree.
John, very good. Have a happy holiday.
You too, John.
All right, appreciate the phone
Take
call.
Care.
You bet. 508-543-7482. That's how you get us here in the program. You know, I want to get back to one of the things that John mentioned there about Lawrence Maroney, and I think even John would admit this, and I probably should have brought this up with him directly, but fact remains is that even though we banged on Maroney quite a bit, we have given him credit where credit is due since he has started this recent spate of solid performances. I mean, he's been getting pretty steadily an average of 4 yards a carry, which is certainly adequate. It's not spectacular. It's adequate. But you need to have at least adequate in order to be what I would think a championship contending football team. And you have that. You know, he had, he's up over the 700-yard mark for the season, which is certainly at least respectable when you consider he's really been a part-time player until the last, month of the season. You know, it was Fred Taylor's job until Taylor got hurt early in the season. And now it's Maroney's job, and boy, wouldn't that be great, though, if you had Taylor and Maroney in a 1-2 punch? I mean, I just think if he's able to go, and of course he's been out on the practice field for, you know, bits and pieces here over the last week or so, then, you know, maybe, you know, that's something that will be a little bit closer to, you know, potentially, you know, still working out. So, at any rate, let's get to some of the emails. This one comes from Paul in Canada, who says, I completely agree. The team I am most afraid of is San Diego for sure. Facing them in round 2 is too soon for me. I'm hoping the boys finish in the four seed because I believe we can beat Indy even in Indy, and after two wins, we would then be far more dangerous against San Diego.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
We may get a chance to talk a little bit about that. And yes, absolutely, if we win this weekend, Tom should be a scratch for Week 17. See, that's what I'm saying. Told you, nobody expects that coming right now, but we're ahead of the curve here. We're talking about it. It's going to happen. They win this week, and they clinch the division. He's just not going to play against Houston. Sorry to tell you that, Texans fans, but, you know, Tom will probably stay home with Giselle and Ben. In Buffalo, on Buffalo last week, a win in December is a win in December, so he says. Talking about what could have happened doesn't matter. The winning streak against them is going to end. Now that it didn't happen this week, then when? We need to give some credit to the Pats and not just the ineptness of the Bills. I was thrilled that they overcame this in the context of the season. I believe this Sunday will be the true barometer. We are undefeated at home, and if there is ever a time we need to send a playoff message, it is this weekend. If we squeak by on Sunday, then I would agree our playoff run will look bleak. All right, Paul. Well played on that one. I kind of feel the same way you do just about everything. Happy that they overcame, you know, a subpar performance in the context of the season. Fact is they just needed to win, and that's exactly what they did. You're going to play a playoff-caliber team this Sunday here in Foxborough, and, you know, if you're able to come through with at least a relatively strong performance, then I think we'd all feel a lot better about, you know, their chances. Forget the last game. All better about their chances, you know, to survive in the playoff derby. I think the only way the Patriots win that last game against Houston is if they lose this one.
What are you talking about, Willis?
I think that's exactly true. I don't think there's any way this team now goes 11-5. If they lose this game, then they'll play that last one to win because they'll need it to clinch the division, ostensibly, if Miami wins this weekend. But they probably also need it to try to work some momentum into the equation before the playoffs start. But if they win this weekend, they're battening down the hatches and they're going to rest people. I really believe that to be the case strongly. All right, here we go with Jim in Florida. John, first, holiday greetings to you and to the listeners on Nitpick Tuesday. Thank you, Jim. Hope it's a great holiday for you in Florida. Hey, how can it not be? It's Florida. As a 40-plus year Patriots fan, and enduring the many lean years the Pats missed the playoffs altogether, I'm very appreciative of this decade-long run that includes so many playoff appearances by the Pats. Having said that, my nitpick, and yes, it's just a nitpick, is that this season seems to be shaping up much like 08. Last season, the Pats missed out on the playoffs altogether because of a tiebreaker. The loss to Indy last year was the most disappointing to me. A victory in that game, a game we blew, would have put us in the playoffs instead of two other teams that made it in our place, Miami and Indy. All right. Although I'm confident the 09 Pats will make it into the postseason, it is shaping up to be another close but no cigar effort for the Pats. We look to finish just behind San Diego for the two spot and a first week bye. A win at Indy and Miami, two games we could have, should have won, and we'd be looking pretty good right now for that two spot. Total agreement there. Finishing as the 3 or 4 seed, we'll miss out on a first-round bye and we'll have to win two games on the road to make it to the Super Bowl. Frankly, even as a diehard Pats fan, I don't realistically see this year's Pats winning road games in both San Diego and Indy. Do you agree, John? Absolutely. It'd be very, very difficult. That's why I say that I think that if you have to win two games on the road, which has been a tough place already for this team to play this year, if you have to win two on the road to get to the Super Bowl, I think, to me, not that it's easy, but it might seem, let's say, more doable, would be to go through Indy first. That way they'd allow you to build up some momentum and maybe even some confidence to go in and take on San Diego in San Diego. Let's put it this way. The shine would be knocked off of, you know, potential, hey, San Diego Super Bowl performance if the Patriots knock off the 17-0 Colts, which is what it looks like it's probably going to end up being. That's what everybody would be talking about and be like, oh, you know what? Here come the Patriots. Same old Patriots doing it all over again. Tell me that wouldn't be what the national media is talking about. Now, if you have to go to San Diego first and then Indy, I don't know that you get by San Diego.
But the only way you're going to do that is if you probably face Indy first. He says, I agree with you. I think Belichick, if the Pats wrap up the AFC East this week, will mail in the Houston game to give the dinged-up starters a week to rest up for round one. Nitpicks aside, win or lose, I'm behind this team 100%, and we'll be rooting for them to go all the way. P.S. I was in New Orleans for the Patriots game last month. That, in addition to what I've seen from Brady and watching his play in games on TV, Brady just doesn't seem as focused and intense as I've seen him in past seasons, which tends to explain, at least in part, to why this offense is so lackluster and unproductive in the second half of games in 09. Thanks, Jim in Florida. Well, Jim, you're kind of noticing what a lot of us have also noticed. I mean, the fact is that, you know, he's had a lot of other things happening in his life. You know, there's an old adage in professional sports. When I was in the NBA some, 20 years ago, 25 years ago almost now, it was kind of like...
Center?
Yeah, I was a center. Center right bench. No, I didn't play.
Water boy?
No. Broadcaster. Shocking, I know. But when I was, you know, traveling in the league, there was an old adage that, you know, women made your knees weak. It's probably been that way in professional sports and all of sports for as long as I can remember. You know, it's kind of like, okay, it's great after the game, but before the game, it's not happening because it's a distraction. No offense, ladies. No offense. It's just, you know... In order to play and compete at this level, you must have your undivided attention focused on the task at hand. If not, you're going to get your block knocked off. It's that simple. Sometimes it's literally a matter of survival for some of these guys. And so when you have other things going on in your life, and obviously life gets in the way, and different guys are able to focus and block things out better than other guys are. Every guy on this team has an issue or has a family problem or has a sick child or an ill parent or something going on during the course of a week that largely goes unnoticed by you or I. And then they go out on the field that day, you know, that week because it's their job. They're paid to play a game and they stink. And then guys like me, fans like you, we rip them because that's our job. That's what we do. And yet we don't know the underlying factor as to why they stunk. Case in point. What was it, 2 weeks ago after Randy Moss's game? Last week after Randy Moss's game? I believe I mentioned here on the show, and even though we don't have anything confirmed here, but I think we said there has to be an underlying matter here. Randy ever so slightly alluded to that in his 45-second post-game comment after the game on Sunday, but, you know, we may never know what was going on. Fact remains is that something was going on. We know what the something going on with Tom Brady is. It's called marriage and a new baby. And there's probably not a lot of sleep going on in that household. The only criticism I would have here is, Tom, you gotta time these things out a little bit better. You know, you gotta time this out maybe a little bit better for when you're not gonna be around in the house. You know, that's the only thing I would say. And I think you probably know if you're a father, then, you know, like I am, then, you know, that's just not doable. You can't plan those things out. They just happen. So, you know, but let's face it. A man's had some distractions, major distractions, life distractions. And when you don't have life distractions getting in the way, there's nothing else for you to focus on but football. So when he got married, actually it started before that, when he had his relationship, you know, with Bridget, where his first son came about, I knew right then and there that, you know, Tom Brady's best days, in my opinion, were behind him. I wasn't going to say altogether. I wasn't going to say that, you know, he'll never have another good day, he'll never win another Super Bowl, but it's all downhill from there. That's just what life does to you. And you have to look at yourself in the mirror and admit that. It happens to everybody. Is it a shame? Well, I think that's a relative term. I mean, no, because you have to be happy for somebody that they've got something in their lives that, you know, make them, you know, feel complete, gives them some joy, you know, that it's not all about work. Sure, that's a great thing to have. But, Jim, you're absolutely right. He's not as focused. He's not as intense. He's not as demonstrative. Even though we've seen flashes of it, it's just not there because his priorities in life have just changed. That's it. Could he play another 5, 6, 7 years in the league? Maybe. He says he wants to. I don't know that he'll get there, but maybe. All right, that's great. But this decade, three Super Bowl championships, I mean, you know, that was this decade. Do the Patriots need to go out and sell the farm now and start building up again? Well, no, not necessarily, but I'm just saying, hey, that was then. This is now. This is what the Patriots are dealing with. It's reality. It's through no fault of his own or anybody else's. It's just how things change. And it changes for these players on a week-to-week basis. Everybody has their own, I like to say, BOS, bag of bleep. And, you know, we all carry it around. It doesn't matter to the next person over from you what your bag contains, because they've got their own bag to carry around. They've got their own burdens, in other words, is what I'm, you know, basically going at here. And nobody really cares what your burdens are. All they care about is, do you do your job? Do you do it to the best of your ability? Do you act professionally? Do you perform professionally? And we all hope that we do that, you know, in our own, whatever our walk of life is. Nothing should be less, you know, Tom should be held to no less a standard. No player in that locker room should be held to any less of a standard than that. And yet they all have distractions throughout the course of a week. It's a very difficult thing to overcome. Distractions that you and I will never know anything about. I'm just telling you, it happens because I've seen it at the professional level for, you know, the last three decades that I've been covering professional sports. Happens in my own life. I'm getting ready for a football game or a basketball game or a show here or whatever, and something happens and, you know, completely distracts me, and yet you don't care. You expect me to give you, you know, my take, my opinion, to give, you know, to get my undivided attention here on this show. And I try to give it to you. Sometimes, some days, it's harder than others. But, and I don't mean this in a negative way, you don't care. You know, you tune in for a specific reason. Because you're a fan, because you want to know what's going on, because you want to hear what the guys who cover the team think, so you can formulate your own opinions and share it with your own friends and your own fans and people that you hang with and talk about the team, and that's how the team creates interest, and, you know, that's, you know, what makes the world go round, so to speak. And that's what we try to deliver. So it's just a fact of life. It happens sometimes. You keep it, and sometimes you lose it. And not necessarily that Tom's lost it, but, you know, it's just the way it is. TG and NJ says, watch out, John. Once the PFW boys get a hold of that statement, Brady's best days are behind him. Once he started messing around with women, they will run with it. I can hear Andy now. John Rook says Brady is done and we should trade him. Well, that doesn't bother me. Shoot, I've been run for a lot worse statements than that. And what I said was basically a generalization anyway. You know that, TG, right? I mean, I'm happy for Tom. I'm happy for him and his family, and I'm happy for any player that's able to, you know, get away from the office and enjoy his family, because that's what it's supposed to be. You know, I kind of wish, you know, we all had that in our own lives. Some of us don't. And that's, you know, but that, you know, hey, it's to each his own, really. To each his own. Whatever floats your boat, whatever makes you happy, whatever makes you comfortable, however you can get through the day. That's what you need to be concentrating on. I like masculine guys. Brady is too girly for me. I would destroy him in every sense. That was B-Lo.
B-Lo laughing. Oh, you okay. Speaking.
Okay. God, that was like 6 years ago or something, 7 years ago. That was a long time ago.
Sucky.
That was an email that was being read, so. Somebody
sure
else's opinion, not mine.
As you said, whatever it takes to get you through the day.
Oh, now I'm getting thrown under the bus. That's not fair. Okay, whatever. Like I said, whatever it takes you to get through the day. You want to make that stuff up? That's
mine fine. Is that little soundboard next to me.
There you go. Sometimes it takes you. Sit there and just hit those, you know, just doink those buttons. And what comes up next? All right, Killian. Question of the day. I think San Diego concerns me the most, but saying that I'm not even scared of them, I'm sure if we face the Colts any time in the playoffs, whether it be a divisional or a championship game, I'm sure we win. I think we will make the Super Bowl, and then the team that scares me the most from the NFC is the Saints. Okay, fair enough. I think I understand the gist of it here.
Killian from Ireland. Face the Colts anytime the playoffs, whether it's a divisional championship game, I'm sure we think we win. Oh, okay, I see what he's saying. Yeah, basically that's kind of what we're talking about here. Thank you, Killian. Nathan, John, I would prefer to play Miami, Jets, Jacksonville, then Houston. I am terrified of the Steelers, and no matter how bad their record is, I think that playing the Patriots in a playoff game is a game that they would get up for. I don't like the matchup. After the Steelers,
any
I would...
Steeler fans listening, you all suck.
Wow.
I was also reading another email. After the Steelers, I would least want to play the Ravens. I think they felt robbed, and they would also play with a chip on their shoulder. Unfortunately, we will be likely left with either the Ravens and or Steelers because they play each other next week. The winner will likely make a wild card. Now, that's a good point, Nathan. You know, if somehow Denver does not hold on to that last spot, that could very well happen. I don't know.
Denver's very iffy.
I know they are.
I mean, they've got Philadelphia and then Kansas City.
Well, you know, Kansas City's not a shoe-in, although what we saw Cleveland do to Kansas City this weekend leads me to believe that, you know, maybe that is a game they can actually win. And who they have, Philadelphia, before that? See, I don't know that they win that one. That would put Denver at 9-7. Should we play the what-if game? Doc, go through the 7-7 teams. You have it called up there on your computer, don't you? Go through the 7-7 teams and the games they have left.
Jacksonville has New England and Cleveland.
All right, they're 8-8.
The Dolphins have Houston and Pittsburgh.
Where's the Houston game? Is that in Miami?
Yep, I think they're both in Miami.
All right, well then, and then Pittsburgh, they're going to go 1-1, 8-8.
Jets are at Indy.
Loss.
And home against Cincinnati.
Loss. 7-9.
Pittsburgh is home against Baltimore and at Miami.
Ooh. That could be two losses.
Tennessee.
But I'll say 8-8.
Tennessee is home against San Diego.
Loss.
And at Seattle.
Win. 8-8. Anybody going to get to 9-7?
And Houston has Miami and then us.
See, I don't think any of those teams make the playoffs. I don't think any of those teams gets in. Nobody is a slam dunk to win two games and go to 9-7. Nobody. Which is why I think that the edge right now lies with Baltimore and Denver in those last two spots. Even though Denver, what's Denver right now? They're 8. They are 8-6, right? So if they go 1-1, they're 9-7. So you'd have to then look at potential tiebreakers.
Well, Baltimore's got at Pittsburgh and at Oakland.
Yeah, well, I think that Pittsburgh-Baltimore game is going to say a lot about the entire AFC playoff, you know, picture. That really is. That's a huge game. That's a big game.
I mean, Cincinnati, you got to think they're going to hang on. They're home against Kansas City and then at the Jets.
Yep. Yeah, you would think that Cincinnati would hang on. I don't know that the Jets win a game. I think the Jets may tank it now that they've basically been eliminated. But I don't see anybody climbing up to 9-7 either. Wow. Well, you know what? This is what the NFL wanted. This is what they wanted when they said, hey, you know what? We like the fact that everybody's equal. We like the fact that we're going to go right down to the last week before we determine playoff berths. And we want teams still in the mix, even though they appear to be out of it. I mean, how about the story of Tennessee this year? How bad was Tennessee when they came in here and got beat 59-0 and 0-6 on the season, and now they've won 7 out of 8 since then? I mean, that's a remarkable story. It really is. If Tennessee is able to make the playoffs somehow after starting 0-6, that's a feat that may never be matched again. Just like the whole, you know, Miami Dolphins 17-0 run to the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, I guess it's conceivable that, you know, Indy could get there, but who amongst us really believes that the Colts are going to go 19-0? Anybody really think that? Even though it looks like they're going to go 16-0, does anybody really believe that that team is going to win the Super Bowl? I say no. I don't think anybody really believes that outside of Indianapolis, because they've got an adequate defense and they got Peyton Manning carrying them on their shoulders.
It's not as strong a team, Indianapolis, I don't think, as it was a couple of years ago. I don't believe it is. Or even 3 years ago, certainly when they won. I don't think it's as good a team. And yet, record-wise, looks like they're going to have a better record. Interesting. All right, web radio at patriots.com. Still looking for your nitpicks from Sunday's game. And the question of the day, which AFC team worries you the most? We want your answers, web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. We'll pause for the timeout and get Russell Baxter in the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? Jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Hopefully this will get you in the mood a little bit. Yeah, we're a couple of days away from Christmas. NFL season's winding down. Playoffs are coming up. Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook for the day before Christmas Eve. There you go. I think I got that right now. Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator, joins us here in the playbook.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
Happy holidays, Russell.
Happy holidays, John. So this is all about Eve? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah, kind of. It's the day before, the day before, the day before, you know. We have to keep track of things like that.
Like a spiral ham.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, good Christmas food reference there.
Yeah, listen, it's a food reference, so it's all I'm all over.
It has to be. It has to be. That's the way it works. We've been kind of ruminating here today about playoff possibilities for obvious reasons. And fact is that we know the Patriots can clinch if they win or if Miami loses, and it sort of seems to be a fait accompli. But if the Patriots do win or if Miami does lose, the conversation beginning to focus now on whether or not the Patriots would just simply rest guys and mail in the last week against Houston. And I basically said, you know what? I don't see any way that they don't do that if they clinch, because you really can't improve your standings playoff wise. It doesn't really make much difference whether you're the 3 or the 4 seed. You're in. That's really all that matters.
Well, I'll go two ways with you here, because I'm one of those people that does believe it is a difference between the 3 and the 4 seed. And I'll give you a great example, but let me go the other way first. In the case of the teams that are the 3 and the 4s and not the 1s and the 2s. And, all you need to look at is the Patriots walking wounded from a week ago, in which Ty Warren nor Vince Wilfork play. That time off, force-timed off by Bill Belichick and not playing in the game against Houston, if it should come to that, would be necessary rather than, guys not playing – and getting out of rhythm. So there's a difference. There's a difference in why you rest guys. You rest guys because they're hurt. To take 3 weeks off, there's no way that helps you as a football team. And we saw many times it happened to the Indianapolis Colts.
Sure.
You saw 1 year it happened to the Denver Broncos. You get out of rhythm and so on. Now I'll go back to your other part. To me, there is a difference between the 3 and the 4. And all you have to go back is to 3 years ago when the Patriots knocked out the number 1 seed, San Diego Chargers, and the Colts knocked out the number 2 seed, Baltimore Ravens, and the number 3 team hosted the number 4 team in the AFC Championship game. So to me, that's – I think you always – because you never know what's going to happen, you always still want to be the higher seed. Now, once you're locked into as high a seed as possible, I think that's important. Let's not forget last year's – championship games alone, it sounds like a locker combination. Pittsburgh was the 2 and Baltimore was the 6.
Okay.
Arizona was the 4 and hosted the 6 Eagles. So that's where I say, once you get into locked into as high a seed as you can go, then I think you have to start resting your walking wounded.
And I think that's exactly what the Patriots will do. I mean,
right.
They're going to be the 3 or the 4. I think that's pretty much a given here.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, there's an outside shot. And let's see. And trust me, that Friday Christmas game, San Diego and Tennessee, which is incredibly intriguing. Two of the hottest teams in the league not named Indianapolis. Okay, you got one team that's won 7 out of 8, and you got another team that's won 9 in a row. Okay, it wasn't too long ago these teams met in the playoffs. And, if Tennessee can somehow keep things going, then, of course, it all becomes a different
– mathematically, you would have a chance, yes.
They have a chance. And, listen, sometimes that's all it takes, because I got news for you. As good as San Diego is playing, for as much as we talk about San Diego matching up well with the Colts, it's not always the same case with San Diego and the Patriots.
Has anybody looked at it? If the Patriots actually went 11-5 and the Chargers finished 11-5, where the tiebreaker would come down to?
I think you also have to. The problem is you have to throw the Bengals in there as well.
Ooh, yeah. Well,
okay,
let's
not forget the Bengals are 9-5 like they are as well. So
if they won too,
once you get into the three-way tiebreakers become two-way tiebreakers, and if I could figure out all the tiebreakers, I mean, I've been talking all week about the AFC.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more 7-7 teams in the AFC than the company Christmas party. Okay.
More 7-7, in the AFC than the I like that. Very good.
Yeah, but it's insane. I mean, but what a difference a year makes. Here, the Patriots a year ago were 11-5 and didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, no kidding.
And this year we'll probably have. I'm going to still guess that there might be 1 or 2 9-7s that don't make it, but there's going to probably be at least 1 9-7
that will. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to sneak in at 9-7, and fact remains is the Patriots could win this division at 10-6.
That's correct, which is what they did back in 2005 when they then beat Jacksonville in the playoffs and then lost to Denver in the crazy game with the long interception return, et cetera, et cetera. And
right.
So on. But listen, Indianapolis, New England, Philly, Pittsburgh, these teams that are in every year, they're like Duke, North Carolina, and UConn. Get in the tournament and then take your chances.
Yeah, well, I guess that's basically how the Patriots will stack up. And unless there's a mathematic chance for them to get that bye, I don't see that there's any way that they don't rest against Houston.
Well, I agree. And again, for them, with the way things have gone on their defense, especially with Warren and Wilfork right now, they need the rest rather than just saying, well, we're going to rest.
Right.
There's a difference of choice, and then there's a difference of not choice when you have guys hurt like that, especially along their defensive front.
Sure. All right. Well, then we'll take a look, a sneak peek then at the games this weekend. We do have a game on Christmas Day, which I think is outstanding. I mean, that's just outstanding. We've got normally Christmas Day has been a day for NBA games. You know, if we're lucky, we might get one or two. But if you're anything like me, Russell, I mean, you know, frankly, the NBA doesn't float my boat until we get well into the spring. I don't even start really paying attention until we get past Christmas Day. So I might just sort of bemuse myself and watch an NBA game on Christmas Day. But we got NFL on Friday. We got the Chargers and the Titans, as you suggested, and that game has great meaning.
It is real great. I mean, again, we know the streaks that both of them are on. I mean, we just talked about the Titans have won 7 out of 8, and the only team they lost to is the undefeated Colts. Meanwhile, you really got to chalk it up to San Diego, because for many people, I'm sure, will be skeptical and say, well, you know, a lot of wins in the division, you know, Oakland, Kansas City, Denver, and so on. Denver, when they weren't playing that well, and we still haven't figured Denver out yet.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, they beat Philadelphia. And the last 2 weeks, two gut check games, a field goal win over Dallas in Dallas, rallying in the final minute to beat Cincinnati. And they're playing superior football right now. Do they have some holes? Yes. But what team doesn't have holes? I mean, let's face it. This is not a season with an overpowering team.
Right.
Some hot teams and some streaky teams, but not an overpowering team.
Mm-hmm.
So they're playing well. The quarterback is playing well. They're getting just enough from the running game. Is their defense still a little suspect? Yes, run defense especially. But teams have had such a problem matching up with the Malcolm Floyds and the Vincent Jacksons and Antonio Gates. I mean, it's like the big bullies on the block. And their big guys are the big guys as receivers, not even so much the big guys. I mean, listen, and all without a Sean Merriman presence on this team and so on. So they're finding a way to get it. I mean, this was an 8-8 football team last year, and it's now 11-3,
mm-hmm.
and cruising. I mean, they're going to likely be, like you said, the number 2 seed. And Phillip Rivers, he has gotten better every year since he's become the full-time starter in San Diego.
Right. I agree with that one especially. And that's the team that I think concerns me the most. If I'm looking at it from a purely Patriot point of view, what team in the AFC concerns me the most right now is being perhaps the most difficult team to match up with if you're a New England team or player or fan, and it's San Diego. And a lot of that is because of Rivers.
Right, and we saw them last year. The teams play each other. Of course, it was Matt Castle playing last year, and it was not Tom Brady. And, you know, even though the Patriots went 11-5, but we are talking a different dynamic with those guys. But one thing that was painfully obvious in that game last year, which was a Sunday night game in San Diego, is the thing that you see them constantly do with those big receivers. They throw that ball deep down over the middle, and, you know, as big as the Vincent Jackson and Malcolm Floyd and Gates are, you know, they're almost like basketball players. They're 6'4 and 6'5 and all that. But it's not the beauty of Phillip Rivers. I mean, I hope I'm explaining this right. Is he's got like basketball type guys. We've talked about that in our meeting.
Yeah.
But yet he doesn't play jump ball with them.
Right.
He puts that ball right in their hands. He drops that ball. I mean, he throws as good a post pattern as anybody in this league. And they really take advantage. And they killed the Patriots with that last year in the Sunday night game in San Diego. So even though it is Brady, and the Patriots, as we know, have had their problems in their secondary this year, but they've created problems for every team secondary this season. And that's they are on quite a confident roll right now.
Absolutely. Well, that being said, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. Do you like the Chargers to win that one on the road? Or do you like Tennessee?
I like Tennessee.
Really?
Yeah, I think I like Tennessee because I think Vince Young has improved so much as a passer, and there is a running game weakness with that team far as stopping the run.
Now, San Diego,
some teams have not exploited it as much as they should have,
okay,
and so on. But look who's coming in this week. All 1,730 yards of Chris Johnson, and I just get the feeling – In what I think will be a real exciting game, that, you know, and San Diego I think will play well, It's kind of a shorter week. It's a trip semi across the country. It's against a very, very hungry team. And, you know, Tennessee impressed me with this last week. They blew an 18-point lead to Miami, but yet still made the plays when they had to and still managed to win the game.
Right.
I will throw out one caveat, though. The loss of Keith Bullock for the Tennessee defense is enormous.
Yeah.
He's out for the year.
Yeah. Wow. That is significant. All right. Well, let's take a look then at the other teams, at least that we're considering here in the playoff derby in this wide open AFC, since that seems to be where your focus is and has been for this week. And, geez, I wonder why with so many teams involved here. The Bengals at 9-5, jockeying for position with the Patriots and or possibly the Chargers here. They've got the Chiefs at home. Can't imagine that that would be a struggle, but then again, you know, who knows how emotional teams react, and Bengals have dropped the last two.
Well, they have, and to two division leaders. And, of course, last week's circumstances, you know, speak for themselves. You know, the Chris Henry, I mean, obviously tragic and so on.
And today's the funeral day, is it not?
Yes, it is. You know, they played with a lot of heart, but they lost to a better football team, just like they probably lost to a better football team in Minnesota. I mean, they've come a long way. But they still, and you saw some of it last week, which is why I talk about San Diego's defense being iffy at times. You know, the Bengals don't have that quick strike ability they used to have when it was Hushman Zada and Ocho Cinco and Chris Henry all together in the play action pass with Rudy Johnson. They do things that they're kind of like the Ravens were a year ago. They do it a different way. They play very, very tough defense. They're much more physical than they have been in years past. And even though I'm sure the Bengals will get Cedric Benson in the flow of things against a horrible, and that's being polite, Kansas City run defense, which made Jerome Harrison look like Jim Brown last week, not only figuratively but literally. He shattered Jim Brown's team rushing record. They have no run defense, and I think just for giggles, you might see a little Larry Johnson against his old team as well.
Fair enough. The one game, I think, other than the Jags at the Patriots, the Pats fans have to be tuned into is the Texans at the Dolphins. Just because 2-7-7 teams, the team that, you know, if they lose are eliminated in the AFC East and, of course, next week's opponent.
Yeah, and this what I'm going to tell you really doesn't have much to do with anything, but it's just kind of a cute little number, is going back to the merger, no team in the league has won more regular season games than the Miami Dolphins. And yet they're 0-4 lifetime versus the Texans.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know what that means,
but it just kind of sounded funny when I said it. And last year, of course, they lost to them as well.
Yeah.
You know, people will remember they beat them in Miami a couple years ago in an opener in the Texans' second season in existence. I don't know what those things mean. But the fact remains. But now the fact remains is they're both 7-7 and both trying to hang in there for the playoffs. I think just might think Miami's the better football team, but that offense, let's put it this way, the young corners of the Dolphins, the Sean Smiths and Devontae Davis, you know, I've seen a lot of receivers as rookies. I don't think they've seen anybody like about what they're about to see. And I know they've seen Wes Welker and Randy Moss, so please, I'm not trying to disrespect them. But I think it's safe to say that what most people consider the two premier wide receivers in the game at this moment are probably Larry Fitzgerald of the Cardinals and Andre Johnson of the Texans because of their size and speed combination and so on. And again, that's not slighting the other receivers.
No, I technically disagree with that, although I think I'd have to throw Welker in there as choice 1A as well right now.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean, Welker and Moss. I mean, they had to line up against both of them, and they did it twice.
Right.
Okay? But now they're about to say line up against a different beast, and I mean that as a compliment.
Sure.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if Miami's going to have to get some heat on Matt Schaub. But Matt Schaub, by the way, is thrown for 300 yards 8 games this year.
That's pretty impressive.
And I want to say the last 2 weeks, Andre Johnson has something like 20 catches for 389 yards. He has 190 yards receiving in back-to-back games.
Wow. The Texans, I've noticed as well, have a winning record on the road, as opposed to a losing record at home.
Well, the thing that's really killed the Texans, as it has since they've come into this league for the most part, is that stretch against the division where they went 0-4, and they just haven't fared very well in the division. I think they finished 1-5 this year, and now they finish up with the Dolphins and the Patriots, but it was another lost year for them in terms of winning division games. And they've been in the league 8 years now. They've beaten the Colts once. They've been in the league 8 years, and I think they've beaten the Titans three times. So what's that, 13-3 and 15-1, something to that? I think I might be botching the Tennessee number, but I know it's 15-1 against the Colts. So they're pretty good outside the division, but the division has killed them.
Yeah. The other game I think that a lot of people will be watching has to be the Ravens playing at the Steelers. Ravens right now holding on to one of those last spots, and the Steelers, a somewhat miraculous win, I thought, you know, over Green Bay to get themselves kind of back in the mix at 7-7. But I wanted to take at least a moment here, Russell, to recognize what Roethlisberger did this last week. 503 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. And if my reading is correct here, he joins Y.A. Tittle and Warren Moon as the only quarterbacks in NFL history to have at least a 500-yard, 3-touchdown, no-pick game.
Yeah, and by the way, the 503 yards is the 10th most in NFL history in the game. There have been 10 500-yard games in the playoffs, and that in the regular season, and that's number 10. You know, and I'm just going to say this in retrospect of what we saw last week because it's indicative of what the league became. You know, John, you and I are both old enough to remember the Power Sweep Packers and the Steel Curtain Steelers.
Yeah.
And what did we get last week? We got 73 points and 900 yards passing.
Okay. Yeah, not exactly a throwback day.
It wasn't our mothers, our fathers, or our uncles, Steelers or Packers last week.
No.
I mean, an exciting game, and you use the word miraculous, and the only reason I don't say miraculous in a cutesy way is because it's not like we haven't seen a Steeler in the last year hug the sideline.
Yeah, and make a catch. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's it. That's the first thing I thought of. I said, oh, my God, shades of the Super Bowl here.
Right. I mean, listen, run to the garbage can, cut out to the left, and just hang on by your toenails, and we'll win the game.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the Steeler way. But the thing about Pittsburgh is they needed all 503 yards of that passing game from Roethlisberger to survive that game. And you know, even though I know they are mathematically alive, I think they're, because of their conference record, they've gotten themselves into a big hole. That being said, the last four times Ben Roethlisberger's played the Ravens, he's beaten them. You know, the times the Ravens have beaten them in the last couple of years, it was actually Charlie Batcher one game, and of course it was Dennis Dixon, the backup quarterback who started the Sunday night game when the Steelers were in the middle of that five-game slump.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore's defense still doesn't scare a lot of people. Ray Rice does, and I can see Ray Rice having a decent day. I somehow think the Steelers pull this out and keep themselves mathematically alive, and of course they end the season with the Miami Dolphins in Miami.
Wow.
which, who knows what is going to mean. For people who are really trying to pay attention to figuring out all these playoffs, and it's almost impossible,
yeah.
The Steelers' best chance actually is to somehow find a way to get tied with Denver. And because they beat Denver head-to-head,
okay,
that'll be their best, I'd say their best way in that. And who knows what's going to happen this weekend. But I think that would be their best way in because, remember, even though they are 7-7, they're only 4-6 in the conference, which means they could be no better than 6-6 in the conference.
Wow.
I think they're going to be maybe one of those 9-7 teams that don't make it.
All right, well, then you mentioned Denver. Let's jump ahead because the Denver Broncos will be on the road playing at Philadelphia. Great interconference matchup and really do or die. Not so much maybe for the Eagles, you know, unless, of course, you know, they're okay with sliding in as a wild card because the Cowboys kind of have put the heat on them a little bit with some improved play in December. But the Broncos are sinking and sinking fast.
Well, an inexplicable one where the Raiders went through every quarterback the other day except Ken Stabler and David Hum. they started the game with Charlie Fry. They eventually brought J.P. Lossman in. And then it turned out...
I mean, they took him away from the L.A. What was it? He was on the
UFL.
The USL team.
Vegas.
Yeah, Las Vegas
and
team,
then,
right.
Of course, my distant cousin Jamarcus Russell came in and led them on the game-winning drive. Now, of course, they're going to go back to Charlie Fry this week. And so on. But listen, I mean, at Philly, and by the way, a homecoming for Brian Dawkins this week, you know, all those years in Philadelphia,
right.
And he comes back with the Broncos, and a tall order because Philly's playing some really good football right now.
Mm-hmm.
But just look at Denver a second. If by chance they do not win this game, and by chance meaning they're quote-unquote not favored to win this game, well, and everybody's pointing, well, they end the season at home against Kansas City. Well, the way the Denver Broncos have played this year, and just getting off a home loss to Oakland, I wouldn't lock in either one of those games. Remember, one of the reasons they didn't make the playoffs last year is they lost a late home game to Buffalo at home. You know, this is – Denver has maybe put themselves into a big-time deja vu all over again situation here if they don't get a little more consistency from their running game.
Right, right. The other game that I wanted to look at, Russell, was the Jets at the Colts. Not so much for what it might impact, but is there a shot that the Jets could win that game?
Well, I think there is. I mean, it'll depend on how much heat they get on Peyton Manning, and I think that's the key. I mean, listen, the Jets special teams are probably going to, in retrospect, the Jets special teams cost them two games flat out this year. The loss to Miami at home where Ted Ginn had two Forrest Gump-like returns for touchdowns in the same quarter. And, of course, last week's debacle trying to kick a field goal. One was a bad snap, one was a block, and one was a miss. As Boomer likes to say up here, one is an accident, two is a trend, three is a problem. And then, of course, a good defensive effort where you only give up 10 points, but unfortunately you give up seven of them in the closing minutes. So it's interesting. Here's a team that has given up only, and I don't care who they play, 32 points in their last four games. And yet they find themselves at 7-7. You know, Mark Sanchez had another rough outing last week as well, dealing with the winds of the Meadowlands and so on. I don't know who the Colts are going to play and how much they're going to play. I still think it's too soon for them to start, quote-unquote, resting people.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that they keep finding ways. And I will say something about their defense, which was pushed around for three quarters at Jacksonville last week. That defense seems to make plays in the fourth quarter. And they made a lot of plays in the fourth quarter last week at Jacksonville. And, of course, Peyton did his thing and so on. And, listen, you don't have to play great the whole game. But that team, of course, is on a major roll. Now, listen, have we ever seen the Jets and Colts play in a game where one team was an overwhelming favorite and the other team supposedly never had a chance? I hearken back to the days, but, of course, we're making jokes here. Of Super Bowl III, but who knows, maybe a little you never know, a little magic. Let's not forget.
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, but people forget this little factoid, okay? It has nothing to do with this game, but just for fun. Anybody remember who was a defensive assistant with the Jets the year they beat the Colts in the Super Bowl?
A defensive assistant?
Yes.
No.
That would be one Buddy Ryan.
Really?
Yes, was with the Jets staff when they won the Super Bowl.
No kidding.
So maybe Buddy will show up at the sidelines, and if they don't beat the Colts, maybe he'll punch his son. Who knows?
Totally and completely forgotten that. I think I remember seeing that somewhere, but
Goes back a long way. I mean, but we'll see. I think I still like the Colts, though. They seem to get it done, and I think defensively, with all their speed, I think they'll give Mark Sanchez something to worry about.
All right. That, of course, will then lead us to the Jaguars and the Patriots. And the Jags at 7-7, still very much in the thick of things amongst the teams that are all there in the mix. And the Patriots need to get this win. If they win, then it's a moot point. They've got the AFC East wrapped up, and then they can kind of let the cards fall where they may.
Well, Jacksonville remains one of the most inconsistent teams in the league. They had a chance to really grab things by the throat, and they wind up losing two heartbreaking home games in the span of 5 days. Will they be more rested than the Patriots? Of course they will. But defensively, again, very inconsistent. Offensively, that kid is a dynamo. I mean, watching Maurice Jones-Drew is just fun. In a league which is so pass-happy now, it's fun to watch a guy who just bowls people over. But the Patriots know what they have in front of them. They're looking at this as a two-week plan, and one of those weeks is to get themselves secured into the playoffs. And, you know, regardless of where they think, I stress that I think it's always important that where you wind up seeding-wise and so on. But the more important thing is to get in and then take care of your business, and I think they'll certainly take care of their business and wrap up the East this week.
I'm going to kind of give you a hypothetical here. And I mean, it's really not so much a hypothetical as it is asking you to kind of look into gaze in your crystal ball and give me the most likely team to advance in the AFC that currently is 7-7.
I still think in the back of my mind, I still think of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they have a shot to play two of the 7-7 teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's significant. And they've already swept the Jets. So that gives them a decent leg up.
In terms of tiebreakers or anything like that? Yeah.
Well, I mean, listen, you know, we know the Jets can't win the East. Is it still possible a long shot Miami could win it? Yes, they could. Okay, because I believe they have a better division record than the or a better conference, whatever it is with the Patriots and so on.
Right.
But because of who Miami plays, the fact that they have 2 7-7s on their team, on their schedule right ahead of them, and the fact that they've already swept one of the other 7-7s, I think that gives them a big leg up. And, you know, even though they lost last week, I still think they've probably executed as well as any team in the last month or so.
Fair enough. Russell, I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday and hope you get a chance to get a little bit of downtime, but then not too much because then, you know, you got to hold your feet to the fire. Playoffs are coming up.
Not even Santa will know where I am on Friday. Okay?
I
hope he delivers at midnight.
Yep.
Okay, but at 12:01, I'm going to have to cut him off. So,
wow. So he'd better be on time is what you're saying.
Well, Santa has a tendency to get wrapped up in these playoff tiebreakers. And I just don't have – listen, you know, drop off the gifts. I'll answer the questions after Sunday. So.
I like it. All right. Santa means business in the Baxter household. Very, very good. Well, listen, it obviously goes without saying, but Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, all you guys down there and so on. You know, you and your staff and so on are always so nice to me and so on. Have a great holiday, and we will talk next week.
Most definitely. You've got it. All the best. Thanks. Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator with us here inside the playbook as he normally is on Thursdays, but moving to a Tuesday because Thursday is, of course, the holiday. Loving that. Loving that. Well, Thursday will be a holiday day for us here, I should say. Friday is the holiday. See, I've totally completely confused myself now. So
Thursday will be a holiday for you.
Yes, because it's Christmas Eve.
I will still be here.
You'll be here on Thursday?
Patriots Friday on a Thursday.
Wow.
A couple days before a game.
Wow. Does it make you any happier that I'm going to come in and do Patriots Monday next week?
Yeah, it'll make up for not seeing you on Thursday.
See? There you go. I'm trying to, you know, pitch in and do what I can, you know, to hold up my end of the bargain here. All right, we're sneaking the time out. We got emails to get to. webradio@patriots.com. That's the address. A couple of questions of the day. Certainly our nitpick Tuesday issues from the win over Buffalo, 17-10 on Sunday. And what team in the AFC scares you the most right now? Answer early and often. And we're going to get to some Jaguars interviews coming up here in the playbook.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
I don't know. I'm not sure this one does it for me. Do you have any Bing Crosby? Or am I showing my age with that one? You got the Bingster point singing this one?
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? In the
I don't know. His voice just kind of exudes Christmas, doesn't it?
What's wrong with Rascal Flatts?
Nothing's wrong with Rascal Flatts. I'm just saying that if it comes to White Christmas, I kind of prefer the Bing Crosby edition. That's all.
This isn't even it, bud.
No, but this is a good Christmas song. I mean, I'm sorry. There's just
need some Christmas songs to get me through tomorrow's shows too.
I understand. Well, then play them all. I don't mind it. I am one that actually enjoys Christmas music. I know that people get a little sick of it when they start hearing it, like on Halloween, which I know some people did this year. And I have to admit that's a little on the ridiculous side. But usually, right around Thanksgiving, right, you know, and maybe obviously to me a little bit after Thanksgiving. I'm ready for Christmas music. I like it. I enjoy it. It makes me feel good. It takes me back to a good time in my life when things were much simpler in life, right? You obviously know what I'm talking about here. Not so much that when we were kids, but we were a little bit more carefree than we are now. All right, what do we got here?
Okay.
Don't play your whole repertoire here.
This is a song that there's a lot of Christmas songs.
Here we go.
And,
see, I was remiss and didn't play this last week.
But this is a good one.
Wrote a song for all those nice little Jewish kids who don't get to hear any Hanukkah songs. Here we go. Put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah. So much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is festival of light.
Who knew he had three versions of this?
Instead of one day of presents, we have eight crazy nights. When you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish, just like you and me.
A classic. Definitely a classic. I know.
The thing that's funny is Saturday Night Live last week did something on Thursday night where they were replaying like their old holiday bits.
Oh, yeah. I missed the show.
Yeah, they had Sweaty Balls and all that stuff on there. And apparently Adam Sandler debuted that song on Weekend Update.
Yeah.
And you could hear the differences from that debut of the song and the changes he made before he did that one.
Yeah,
just kind of cleaned it up a little bit.
Yeah, very cool though. It's an excellent song. And of course, in my household, we actually we're multi-denominational, so we actually celebrate Hanukkah and Christmas, and it's a little bit different. Do you guys celebrate both in your household? No,
just Hanukkah.
Yeah. Okay, I wasn't sure. But, you know, it just so happens that even though my wife grew up Jewish, she hasn't really celebrated it, Hanukkah so much as an adult. And when her parents broke up, they, one went one way, the other went the other, one celebrated Christmas, the other celebrated. So she was one of the few Jewish kids she knew that actually had a Christmas tree in our house most of the time. So anyway, we've kind of gone both ways and I've enjoyed it. It really kind of adds to the overall, specialness, I think, of the holiday season. All right, I got an email here that I want to share before we're going to hear from Jack Del Rio, the Jacksonville head coach here momentarily. But Tim in Baltimore has apparently done some of the research involved in the tie-breaking procedures. So I wanted to share this with you because Tim was kind enough to share it with us. Tim says, to the playbook, if the Pats win out and the Chargers lose out, the Pats will have the tiebreaker. because of common schedule record, and the Pats would get the bye week. The Bengals can't get the bye week because they lost head-to-head with the Chargers. All right, that makes sense. So if the Bengals win out and they all finish 11-5, it refers to it reverts to doesn't go to like a is it a three-team mini conference? What do they do there in the NFL? See, that's where I'm lost. I'm so used to college basketball tiebreakers here. Anyway, Tim says if the Pats beat the Jags and the Titans beat the Chargers, then the Pats will have to go all out against the Texans. Chargers play at 4 p.m. The Pats will play at 1 p.m. in Week 17. Interesting to see, but yeah, I guess technically that's right. I guess again, it still does kind of hinge on what happens with Cincinnati, but. If the Patriots win this week and the Chargers lose on Christmas night to Tennessee, then the bye is back in play, apparently, for the last week. Wow. Well, that would certainly be one way to, you know, go in and try to put, you know, your best effort forward against Houston. Although, you have to find a way, I kind of feel like you have to find a way to balance this thing out a little bit because you have a definitive need to rest some guys. Maybe they just kind of have to do it in stages. Maybe, you know, you've already lost, you didn't have Will Fork and Warren this last week. Maybe you try to get through this next week, you know, with Jacksonville without them, and then you bring them back to kind of get them back into game shape against Houston. Maybe you have to think of it in a segmental type of thing where, all right, these two or three guys are out this week, and the other two or three guys that need it, they're going to miss against Houston. And hope that it all works out. Because I don't know any other way you could really plan. I mean, does that make any sense? You know, obviously, if you have a chance to get the bye, you want to play for the bye because then that's one less game that you have to win to get to the Super Bowl. Number two, you're guaranteed one game at home, and you might still get a second one. And who wouldn't rather have that opportunity rather than playing one at home and then having to go to two games on the road to get to the Super Bowl? I mean, it's a huge difference. And, yes, I know history dictates that it isn't the end all. Last year's playoffs will certainly show you that with lower-seeded teams actually getting into the Super Bowl and Pittsburgh winning it and Arizona getting there. And, you know, it didn't take, you know, home field advantage throughout the playoffs to be able to get to the Super Bowl or even win a Super Bowl. But still, all things being equal, you'd rather have that chance because you feel like, you know, the odds are going to be on your side. It doesn't make it difficult. It doesn't make it impossible. But you feel like you'd rather at least have that opportunity because, you know, the odds kind of even out a little bit there. Well, Tim, I appreciate your sending us that email. Jester on Maui. Aloha, Jester. If we win our division, do we host a wild card or do we travel to a wild card? And if we win that, do we go to San Diego? Well, if we win the division, we host. If you win your division, you are guaranteed to host a home game as a division champion. Even if they win the division and say they finish as either the third or the fourth seed, they're still going to play that first game in San Diego. I mean, the first game at home. There's no way of knowing if they will go to San Diego that week until the playoff seedings are met. If the Patriots finish as a four, they would play the five seed in the opening round of the playoffs at Gillette. And then if they win that, then they would travel to the top remaining seed, which would probably be Indianapolis. But if the Patriots are the three seed, they would play the sixth seed at home at Gillette. And if they win that, they would travel to the second highest team left, which would be, undoubtedly, if it's not the Patriots, it's going to be San Diego. So there's your scenario for getting the Patriots to go to San Diego. Patriots would have to be, most likely, number one, they would have to be the three seed, and they'd have to win against the six to go play at San Diego. So there's your scenario. Hope that helps, Jester. Really sucks that you're on Maui, but hey, dude, somebody's got to be there, right? Claude in Kenner, Louisiana. I agree that the Pats will rest players against Houston in Week 17 if the seeding is decided. But if the Patriots win the last two and the Chargers lose the last two, would the Patriots get the two seed? Yes, we have just discussed that very possibility. Other than the fact that, you know, Cincinnati could still throw a wrench into the mix, and I'm not sure how the three-way tiebreaker works right off the top of my head here. He says, other than division foes, the two common games I see are Baltimore and Tennessee. Pats won both. Baltimore already beat San Diego. I know that this is highly unlikely, but stranger things have happened. The Chargers are supremely talented, but nothing is guaranteed. They have been supremely talented the past few years and won nothing. Plus, North Turner is still the head coach. Would anyone really be surprised if they lost? I would much rather play Denver and Indy in the playoffs, but we can and have beaten San Diego in the playoffs. I'm most worried about the Ravens. Their D is very good, and their offense is loaded with potential. Thanks. All right, Claude, very good. Claude votes for Baltimore as the team he's most worried about. What about you? You got time to send in your email, webradio@patriots.com. All right, let's get to the interviews. And just a short while ago, completed here at Gillette Stadium, a Patriots media meeting with Jacksonville head coach.
Yeah, Jack, I guess I'll start it off. Sal Verber from the Globe. I wanted to ask you about kind of the difficulty, I mean, kind of the problems that you guys have had with the blackouts this year, and if that's been kind of, I don't know, a discouraging thing for your team, having to play in front of some empty seats at home, and then obviously a lot of your fans don't get to see a lot of your games.
I've really remained focused on just preparing our football team, you know, and the guys working hard and getting ready for each ball game. And, you know, the people that are able to be there, we certainly appreciate the support. And, you know, we just continue to focus on our own job.
Hey, Jack, what's it like for you this week to kind of prepare for Fred? I know that in the NFL you guys get so focused and so kind of, you know, what the task at hand is. But is that kind of strange at all when you – think about maybe playing against him if he comes back?
I'm sorry, did you say that again?
Just wonder, what's it like for you having coached Fred Taylor for a few years and now have to prepare for possibly playing him?
You talking about Fred Taylor?
Yes, yes. Yeah,
I've not heard you very well on this line.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. No, look forward to seeing Fred. He's, you know, he's one of the all-time great Jaguar players, and you know, I know that you know, he's been on the mend a little bit the last few weeks. I'm sure he's anxious to get back and help the football team there. He's always been a guy that has fought through and been very, very good when he's been on the field. And so look forward to seeing him.
And then on your side, you know, that I guess this is Maurice's first year being, you know, a real feature back, a real, you know, kind of one, you know, his backfield now, I guess. How's he done this year, and how's he kind of held up in that role?
Well, you know, obviously that decision was made in the off season to make Maurice the go-to guy. And, you know, he's delivered and had an outstanding season for us. You know, it was never in any way meant as any type of disrespect or anything like that toward Fred. I think the organization, you know, felt great about the contribution he made here for the time he was here. But it was time for more of Maurice, and so that's what we elected to do. And, you know, he's delivered and had a great year for us.
Jack, how are the two young tackles performing this season? The guys you took 1-2 in the draft.
I think they've had you know, good solid starts to their NFL career. They've played from day one. You know, both guys have gotten better as the year's gone on, and you know, we think they'll be good players here for a long time.
Wait, when you look at the Patriots, Jack, and the way they've been playing, what stands out to you as what will be a big challenge for your team here?
Well, you know, I think challenges are presented in all three phases. You know, they've obviously got a lot of skill on offense. They've run the ball well. They've thrown it well. The Welker's already got 109 receptions. You know, he and Moss are as strong a 1-2 punch at receiver as you'll find anywhere in the league. Tom's been, you know, very good coming back from his injury, and you know, special teams wise, they do a good job. They always have. I mean, they do a good job with their special teams, and and defensively, you know, they're a defense that gives you multiple looks, you know, kind of a game plan, really throughout their team. They're pretty much a scheme of the week or an attack for each opponent. So it makes you work a little bit in the preparation. But, you know, well-coached football team, once again, you know, in the thick of things, and I'll be heck of a game.
Jack, how did you guys take advantage of the extra 3 days you had this week as a plan on Thursday night?
A little extra film study, a little extra rest.
Did you give the guys the weekend off?
Yeah, the players had the weekend off.
Do you think that it's an edge going into this game, that you think that those extra days are going to give you guys a little bit of an advantage?
Well, you know, I know they've been pretty good at home. You know, they're 7-0 at home this year. You know, they're the one with the Pro Bowl that's throughout the roster. And we're just going to do the best we can to put together a group that's going to come up here and scrap and fight and see if we can, you know, find a way to get a victory while we're up there.
Yeah, Jack, one more from me, too. Obviously, a couple years ago, you guys came up and won in Pittsburgh in the playoffs. And I believe you'd won there earlier in that year, too. How is a team, I mean, I know sometimes teams from the South struggle coming north and playing in these conditions. How do you go about preparing a team, you know, from a warmer weather climate? I know it's not Miami where you're at, but from a warmer weather climate, how do you prepare your team to come up and play in the elements?
Well, I think, you know, we do the best we can to travel up there and understand we're there for one reason. You know, I've never really been one to worry about the elements, whether it's raining, snowing, windy, cold, hot. I don't think that really has a whole lot to do with you as a football team or you as a football player going out and giving great effort, understanding what your role is and embracing that role, giving everything you have. So, you know, we're just going to do the best we can to keep ourselves focused on the task at hand. I think there's plenty to do there. And not worry so much about whether we're, you know, feeling a little cold or the wind's blowing or any of those types of things. So that's basically the way we've approached it. I think our team's done a pretty good job of traveling into the elements and playing well.
Jack, how's Eric Cox played for you this year at cornerback? Did he step in there from the opening week and start for you? How's his progression been?
No, he's had a good year for us. You know, he's one of many rookies. I believe we've got 10 rookies that will be active or have been active on game days contributing. He's one of the guys that falls in that category. He's been solid. He's played all year. Been very dependable. I think he's, you know, he's a bright young guy that works hard every day. You know, he's got a good future. So I think Terrence Knight and he both have been able to play all year defensively for us. And Terrence Knight being the defensive tackle out of Temple. And those two young men have done a nice job stepping in and filling a role and really being solid contributors for us as rookies.
When you go back to that decision when the Jaguars selected Cox and making that trade, first part would be, Jack, what did you see in him that you liked enough, you know, to do that? And two, when you look back on that, are you pleased with, you know, in retrospect, making that decision?
Well, what we saw is we saw a player that we thought had the skill set to come in and do what he's done. That is, come in and help us and earn a place in the lineup and contribute to our cause this year. And that,
are we still going to?
You know, there weren't many guys like that left on the board. He just happened to be one that came from a small school that maybe wasn't as highly touted. But, you know, we really liked the player that we had evaluated. So I give credit to Gene Smith. He did a nice job of sticking to his guns and knowing what he believed and having the courage to pull the trigger and make the deal and, you know, acquire a player that's been able to help us all year.
That's great, Jack. Thank you very much.
Jack Del Rio, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, as the Patriots get his team coming up on Sunday. You know,
I think their defense is
Del Rio.
I have to admit that he sounds pretty businesslike. Not that you would expect anything different. from them for Sunday's game. But he, you know, sometimes you will use an excuse of can't hear you properly when you don't really want to answer the question.
Del Rio.
And because of that, I'm not saying that he was trying to, you know, play any games there with the Patriots media, but, you know, he just, you know, it's a necessary evil. The Jaguars actually wanted to do it today as opposed to tomorrow, which normally is the interview day, because they're turned their schedule up, I guess, by a day, because they're going to get here after the holiday, and they're going to try to give their guys, I guess, a chance to enjoy at least a little bit of the holiday. So we've kind of moved things up a little bit.
Unexcused.
A day here during the course of the week, but definitely all business. No real chance to kind of sit back and think about what was, and I fully expect Jacksonville to come in firing their guns, because, you know, a loss is going to bury them, and it'll all pretty much be over with. So Patriots are going to have their hands full. If you have all hands on deck, I think that's what has to happen this weekend. I think, as I mentioned earlier in the program, that if, you know, you play what you have, you try to win this game, you're playing against a team that is a playoff caliber team, and hopefully you can, you know, build some momentum for yourself. And then if it boils down to where you can't play yourself into the position of a bye, then you probably end up, you know, resting guys against Houston if you can improve your playoff positioning, or if there's nothing to clinch the final week against Houston. So that seems to be what's kind of on the agenda right now for the Pats. Let's see. I've got a couple of other emails here, I think, that I wanted to share. Ah, here we go. Well, we read that one. Let's see. Where's the other one here? Oh, this one comes from Preston, who says, where has the new defense been that was implemented Sunday and was quite effective? I have not seen anything like it. It looked like a new team out there. Offense still sucked, but good job on the defensive part of the ball. Well, it was called, you know, basically we've seen the Patriots do it before, where they'll, you know, stand up one guy at the line of scrimmage, or they'll put two guys in the line of scrimmage and put four or five backers in there, or they'll put five or six defensive backs in there. Organized chaos is basically what it is. And they thought that since they hadn't broken that out, I guess, it's been probably, what, 4 or 5 years in particular that they've had to thrown that up against Buffalo, because, you know, you had a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick who had obviously not really seen anything like that. Obviously, he's getting his first career start against the Patriots. Why not throw him something different that we haven't pulled out in a couple of years? So I actually thought that was a pretty good move. And I think when you consider that, you know, ultimately you did hold Buffalo to 10 points, that you'd have to say that the experiment, especially you're undermanned without the presence of Wilfork and Warren on the defensive line, you'd have to say that the scheming worked. You were probably still a little bit too soft for my liking in the secondary, because even though it was an earlier caller and an emailer suggested that, you know, Brandon Merriweather did a little jawn with Josh Reed after he dropped what seemed to be a sure touchdown pass in the fourth quarter that could have drastically, radically changed, you know, the outcome of the game on Sunday. Fact is, you know, he was jawing at him for dropping the ball, and through, I mean, all the fault of his own. He doesn't drop that ball. It's a completely different game. Buffalo's got at least 17 points on the board and could be playing for a win. And then you'd be talking about, we'd be talking today about one of the all-time great collapses in Patriots history. Man, we were so close to just having it all come tumbling down right there at the very end. And fortunately, the Patriots found a way to, you know, win in the end, hold on in the end. So the defense largely gets the plaudits, largely gets the kudos. In spite of the soft play on the secondary again. The offense struggled at best, save for Lawrence Maroney, who remains at the very least solid as a running back contributor. The Buffalo Bills, I thought, did a pretty good job of making sure they marked where Welker was, where Randy Moss was, although the Patriots did make a concerted effort to get the ball to Randy. There's not much doubt about that. But knowing that the Bills had one of the worst rush defenses in the league, in fact, statistically, I believe the worst, you know, the game plan was to be relatively conservative in this game. Maybe we can accomplish a couple of things. Number one, we keep more guys healthy. Number two, we still win the game. because we're attacking, you know, what seems to be a noted weakness that the Bills have. And so that worked out. It wasn't imaginative. It wasn't fun to watch, but it worked. Defensively, pretty much the same thing. Imaginative, yeah, somewhat, because you hadn't seen it in a while. Was it fun to watch? It was different. Did it work? Yeah, sure, it worked. Ultimately, you got a win. You held the other team to 10 points. So it was just a win. It was a workmanlike win. You got past it. 13 in a row against the Bills. That streak will come to an end at some point. And now you move on. And now it's Jacksonville on Sunday. And a Jacksonville team that's going to be fighting for its playoff lives at 7-7. So that's where we stand. Thanks for the participation today. Thanks for the emails, the phone calls as well. Russell Baxter, of course, in the playbook. Tomorrow, a couple of guests in store as we work more toward the Jacksonville Jags on Sunday. Eric Scalavino from PFW will also be here in the opening hour. And we'll get down a little bit further into looking into playoff scenarios. We'll get your emails. We'll share some holiday wishes with you. And we'll continue counting it down as we are into Week 16 and inching ever so much more closely to the playoffs for the New England Patriots. Same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow.